Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
America's political leaders can come together in a bipartisan way and solve these problems. We always have. But we're not going to be able to do it if we are distracted. We're not going to be able to do it if we spend time vilifying each other. We're not going to be able to do it if we just make stuff up and pretend that facts are not facts. We're not going to be able to solve our problems if we get distracted by sideshows and carnival barkers.
You look at what's happening with gasoline prices, where he said he has no control over prices, which he does if he gets on the phone or gets off his basketball court or whatever he's doing at the time. I mean, he should be focused on OPEC and getting those prices down.
Yes, it's me and I'm in love again.
Yeah, he should be focused on something other than basketball and entertainments in the White House and the sideshow of the birther fires. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Okay, now he says we don't have time for this kind of silliness. And I said yesterday in the Savage Nation that he is actually stoking the fires of this controversy in order to distract Americans from his many failures as a president. He goes on the Oprah Winfrey show. I've never watched it once in my life. I don't know who would watch a show like that. He goes on the collapsed, failed CNN. He goes to root for the New York Greenbackers and raised money yesterday. And jokes again about the birth issue. He's everywhere in the media, not talking about the economy, not talking about national security, not talking about high taxes, not talking about illegal immigration, not talking about unemployment, not talking about rising gas prices, not talking about government intrusion in our personal lives, not talking about changes to our healthcare system, not talking about the national debt and government spending, and so forth and so on. And that is why I say he is actually stoking the flames of the birther fires. And if you actually focus on where Obama was born, you're falling into his trap. You're missing the fundamental fact that he is a Marxist and that he is destroying our military and economy. I say don't be distracted and don't let Mr. Obama stoke the birther fires while America burns around us. So let me ask you a question. Which issue facing America today worries you the most? Healthcare system changes? Government intrusion in our lives, rising gasoline prices, unemployment, the flood of illegal immigrants in the United States, out of control government spending and the growing national debt, outrageously high taxes, the wreckage of our war in Afghanistan because of a lack of a commander-in-chief, and national security. Which one of these issues are the issues that you fear or face the most? The phone number here on the Savage Nation is 1-800-449-8255. There are many, many, many stories we can talk about, and we should be talking about them on the program right now. I want to go to a few sound bites first so that you can get yourself in the mood. I know you probably burned out already on the birth issue. So I've asked you, which of those issues I mentioned is an issue that bothers you? Listen to clip 9 now of the Marxist in chief.
This argument is not about numbers. It is about values. Because on one side, you have folks who believe that we can slash education funding by 25% or transportation funding by 30% or investments in clean energy by 70%, and we can turn the Medicare system into a voucher program so that we're shifting costs onto seniors. It's a vision of a small America, of a shrunken America. And then there's another vision that says we can live within our means as a government. We can act responsibly in terms of our budget.
Nonsense. You've never managed a hot dog stand. Everything has been given to you. You never delivered a newspaper, so far as we know. You never worked in a luncheonette the way I did. You never worked in a factory the way I did. You never started a small business the way I did. Everything was handed to you because you are a stealth. Well, I don't even want to go into it anymore. I am sick of this rubbish coming out of the Marxist in chief. What do you mean the vision of a shrunken America? When you have a drunk husband and a drunk housewife running a household, and they wake up one day and find out that they're bankrupt because they've been going on too many vacations, they're spending too much on flat screen TVs and too much on new clothing and jewelry and diamonds and dinners, they go to the bank and they say, Mr. Banker, give me more money. And if you don't give me more money, I'm going to say that you have a vision of a shrunken family. This is a man who is out of touch with reality. Obama is not only a Marxist and an ingenue who doesn't even know what the first order of business is, which is balancing the budget. The man is out of touch with reality. He has the nerve to say that we should become a socialist nation, an even larger socialist nation, a bigger socialist nation, when about one out of two adults is not paying taxes in this country. One out of two adults in this country is a bum. A bum living on a handout. And the other one out of the two are carrying them on their back. And he says that the burden is not too heavy for those of us who are working, and we should carry even more bums on our back. Why don't you bring in another 20 million illegal aliens from Mexico and from South America? And if you want to call me racist for it, I'll turn it right back on you. What do you call going after the European traditions of America? What do you call going after the Christian traditions of America? But racism, pure and simple. It's getting me sicker by the day. I try to avoid it. I try to be, accommodating to a certain extent to a man who I know is frankly way over his head. And I try to see the world in a way through the eyes of the progressives. Because I know that many of them are simply idealists who don't even understand reality. They've never held a job other than a government job or a city job or a state job or a university job. They have never started a business. They have never had to face the red tape of starting a business. So to them, anyone who's in business is a crook. They don't even understand what it takes to start a business. But I'm a man who understands that people are very complicated, and you can't simply categorize a man through one act and say that's who he is. Let's take a picture of Albert Einstein, the one with all of his hair and this and that and the sweater. So if you want to debunk his theory of relativity and you're a fool, you say, he's just an old hippie. Look at his hair. E equals MC squared is passe. And of course, you'd be a fool to do it. But that's what many people do to Michael Savage. They say he's a right winger. Therefore, everything he says is invalid. And I ask you to read the New Yorker interview, and you'll see much more to me than what you have heard about Michael Savage. Read one of the 27 books I've authored. Take a look at the PhD I earned from the University of California, or the two master's degrees, or the great work I've done on the environment. Then you'll see a more rounded picture of Michael Savage. You'll see a picture you don't want to see, because then you'd have to listen to me. Then you'd have to evaluate my ideas. So I say, since I demand that of my audience and of the public at large, well, I should apply the same thing to Barack Hussein Obama. It's easy to say he's a Marxist. It's easy to say he's a Leninist and dismiss all of his ideas. So I said, well, let's evaluate his ideas. Let's see what his ideas really are. He wants to help more people, does he? And how does he do it? By going to work for the New York Greenbackers three times this month, raising money from the very pirates who destroyed this economy in order to put him in power. The very pirates of Wall Street who are ripping us to shreds like the sharks that they are, who should be reined in by reestablishing the uptick rule so they would stop their crazy trading. So he doesn't really want to help the poor. The poor are screaming for help because they're not getting it from him. He's attacking the middle class in order to reward the very, very, very wealthy who put him in power. He is doing exactly what Hugo Chavez did in his early days in South America. He is doing what every other socialist dictator has done in the early phases of his revolution, of his social revolution. He's playing to the center. He's courting the industrialists. He's courting the huge businessmen like General Electric and Westinghouse. He's giving them one favor after another, the way, I'm sorry to say, a certain Adolf did with Krupp Steel in the early days of his administration in Germany in the 1930s. Don't make any mistakes about it. And again, if you missed the point, you missed the point. I can't help you. In the early days of his socialist regime, before he opened up the death camps for business, Adolf Hitler courted the big industrialists. He was a socialist, make no mistake about it. National Socialism, National Socialist Party, Nazi Party, National Socialism. And what he did was he courted the huge industrialists of Germany who were leery of this man from Austria, this corporal from Austria. But he gave them one favor after another, and he gave them lots of contracts in order to keep them quiet and to get them in his court. Eventually, they found that they couldn't control him. The same exact picture is played out around the world. This is how dictators arise. Dictators are not born overnight. Dictators are made. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You want to get down to the facts? You want to talk about something other than BO's BC? How about this? Which issue of the following disturbs you the most? Changes to the healthcare system under Obamacare? Government intrusion in our daily lives? Rising cost of gasoline and other fuels? The flood of illegal aliens in America? High taxes? Government spending and the increasing national debt? National security? High taxes? The war in Afghanistan? Unemployment? You want to talk about something other than Oprah Winfrey's birther story in CNN's working with the Obama administration to put this to rest? Well, let's look at the real issues. There's an awful lot of them. This man is the worst president in American history, the most divisive, the least qualified, the most incompetent, and the most secretive. New York, Nick, you're the first up. Go ahead, please, from WOR.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I mean, we've been in Afghanistan 10 years, and I haven't heard Obama say anything about it in, like, 3 years. You know, we had nine guys.
Do you remember when Bush had us in Iraq, all of the vermin on the left was saying, it's the wrong war in the wrong place, we should be in Afghanistan? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, pictures of dead Iraqis in the newspaper every single day next to George Bush's face.
Well, that we don't have a commander-in-chief. We have a something other than that. We have a fundraiser-in-chief. The men on the front lines have no leadership whatsoever. This man is not a commander-in-chief by any means. He's an anti-war, anti-military, anti-gun president. How can he ever be a commander-in-chief? What does he know about war? And so, therefore, since he's an anti-war candidate and an anti-war president, don't you think the men get that message? I speak to men who come back from Afghanistan, and the rules of engagement are so terrible that they're afraid to do their job the same way the police on the streets of America are intimidated by the ACLU and the other rats on the left who prevent them from doing their job. They won't do their policing because if they do it, they wind up before some tribunal of jackals saying that you conducted police brutality, you held them too tight, you held them not tight enough, you used a taser, you didn't use a taser, you should have used the gun instead of a taser. That's because the vermin from NYU have destroyed the policemen of the United States of America, just as they're destroying our military. That's my opinion. That's my opinion. Go and define me by it. Define me any way you want. Just get the name right. Savage. New York. Bob, you're on the Savage Nation. WOR. Go ahead, please.
We don't have a currency. We have absolutely nothing. I lived in Austria for 8 years, and I know what it's like when a currency is devalued. When we got there, it was before the euro. We got 13.5 shillings to the dollar. Within 3 months, it was down to 9.5 shillings to the dollar. And I was still making the same amount of money, but I couldn't buy anything.
But isn't that exactly what's going on in America right now under Obama?
It's scary. And you know, and as far as healthcare goes, but the dollar is the main thing. If we don't have a dollar, we don't have anything. But I lived over.
Yes, but he and Geithner and Bernanke are purposely destroying the U.S. dollar as a world currency.
All right,
Geithner even said it. Geithner went to China a few months ago and he said he welcomes the ascension of the Chinese dollar, the Chinese currency. He said that.
If I did what Geithner did, I would have been in jail by now. But that aside, the healthcare, I mean, when I broke a tooth in Austria, they said, do you have Krankenkasse? I said, yes. I said, when can I get in? I broke a tooth. They said, 3 weeks from now. And, oh, that's right. I forgot to tell you. I'm paying cash. They said, how about 3 this afternoon?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many. You pick, you know. But if we don't have a dollar, we don't have anything. I mean, honestly.
Yes, but this government is letting the dollar languish. They're printing money, diminishing or diluting the value of the dollar. Consequently, they're doing to us just what was done in your the nation you're mentioning, Austria. The question is, how do you stop them from this madness? The answer is stop the spending. That's what the Tea Parties are about primarily. And yet they're being smeared by the communists who want endless spending on useless social programs that we can't afford. Thanks for the call. Thank you for the call. Let's go across the country. Let's go to Sacramento, California. KSTE, Michael, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please. Michael, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation. Okay, that's a dud. It's like you fire a firecracker and nothing goes off. Houston, Texas. Barbara, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Michael, you are always dead on. I absolutely am very concerned about illegal immigration. I've done a three-year study, interviewed 2,000 of them here in Texas, and my information will be coming up in September. It is alarming, and I think you're generous on saying 20 million. I calculate 40 million. And if we finally have people who have the courage to stand up and lead this country, who will address illegal immigration, that will address a lot.
But the Republicans are not saying anything because they're cowardly. You know, Tony Blair, the former Prime Minister of England, admitted today or yesterday that the reason that they let the disease of radical Islam flourish in England was that they were too PC. And he said, oh, that's why we didn't deport them or say anything. He should have added, that's why we banned Michael Savage from Britain in order to throw a live body to the radical Muslims in England. But the fact of the matter is the reason the Republicans won't say anything about the illegal aliens is because they're guilty of the same exact cowardice. They're afraid to stand up to the Hispanic lobby. That's what the problem is here.
We need the right people in.
La raza means the race. La raza means the race, not a race. It is a racist organization by name. And do you know the former head of La Raza is now an appointee inside Obama's White House? I'm the only one who knows that Cecilia Munoz was given a reward and put right into the White House by Barack Hussein Obama, the woman who used to run La Raza, the race. Make no mistake about it. We are fighting for the survival of this nation.
Savage.
Well, we have breaking news for you, and it's good news. Apparently, the communists on the Supreme Court just got dealt a serious blow. Businesses were just given a great, great, great gift. Apparently and allegedly, the way I'm reading this, class action lawsuits are now dead in the United States of America. All of the rats who specialize in this field are going to have to look for other work, such as holding up old ladies on turnpikes. This just came out minutes ago. The U.S. Supreme Court has granted a whopping victory to AT&T, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and supportive corporations by issuing a 5-4 decision. The court stripped away individuals' rights to band together in class action lawsuits should a corporation choose to include an arbitration requirement in its contracts or licensing agreements. What this means is that the decisions of the lower courts, which were based on a previous California Supreme Court decision, which, of course, was in favor of the lawyers, are preempted by the U.S. Federal Arbitration Act. This is an 18-page decision. It was written by the great Justice Antonin Scalia. He was joined by Chief Justice John Roberts, God bless him, and Justices Anthony Kennedy, who, by the way, is normally a liberal, Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas, who also supplied his own 6-page concurring opinion. The people who opposed it were the left-wing fanatics Stephen Breyer, joined by Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the unqualified Sonia Sotomayor, and the unqualified Elena Kagan. They were knocked out of the box. The fact of the matter is it's gone back to the black robe justices. It's a phenomenal case. It's a big decision. And perhaps all of the rats who have practiced their class action law will finally have to find something else to do. As I said, holding up old ladies at gas stations would probably be their next line of work. Texas, David, you're on the Savage Nation.
I was just wondering what the deal is with the oil because, you know, Obama talks out of both sides of his mouth. On one side, he says, oh, we need to be dependent, you know, from foreign oil and this and that. And then he turns around and says, oh, we're going to send all this money down to Colombia. We want to be your best customer. Sell us some stuff, you know.
That's right. And he invested in Brazilian oil development. And yet he prohibits drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. He prohibits slope drilling in Alaska. He prohibits the drilling, rather the exploration in Colorado. We could be energy independent of the entire world if we exploited our own energy sources in this country. We sit on one of the largest reserves of energy in the whole world. You know that?
Yeah. Why does nobody say anything about this on the?
Well, the reason is not Obama. Remember, Obama's only a front man. You have to remember that. All presidents, and have been for a long time, are front men for many special interests, and they have to balance many, many forces. The people behind them are numerous. One of the special interests that put Obama in office, in fact, is the very industry that he attacked, which is the oil industry. They like the monopoly they have. The seven sisters who run the oil industry act as one. It's a clear monopoly, and they love the fact that gas is $5 a gallon. They do not want new drilling. They do not want new oil exploration, no matter what they say. It's all a shuck and a jive. They'd like you to pay $10 a gallon. Take a look at their profit. Take a look at their bottom line, and you'll see that I'm right. Albany, New York. Chris, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hi, Michael. On a quick personal note, I also had a black standard poodle named Teddy for 14 years. I lost him a few years ago.
God bless him. I hope he's in poodle heaven.
I pray he is, and I pray I meet him. I cannot tell you, and I'm sure you'll agree.
Well, you'll be his pet in the next world. Remember I told you there's somebody. I think it was John Steinbeck who wrote this. I could be mistaken. If I recall correctly, he said that the way it works is that in the next world, we are the pets of our pets, and they treat us the way we treated them.
Then he'll treat me good. That was the angel of my life.
Is he going to feed you well? He's got to watch your diet. So what else is on your mind?
Okay, I just wanted to say about Mr. Obama. He is the most unbelievable, arrogant, incompetent president we have ever had. And the American.
Well, when he raises up that head and looks down his nose, he reminds me of a foolish college teacher who's insecure.
I fully believe the American people were scammed when he was elected.
Well, I fully believe. We all know it. I mean, we have most people, not me, I didn't vote for him. America has more voter remorse under this president than any president in history. You heard of buyer's remorse?
Yes, but I want to wish you the best.
No, you see, you heard of buyer's remorse, right? But Michael Savage determined that this is voter's remorse, so you could steal it tomorrow. Las Vegas, Chris, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I wanted to tell you I was reading Trickle of Poverty in the workplace where I work. I was on break, and a couple of my friends asked me what I was reading. And when I showed them the cover of the book, they're like, what is that, the American version of Mein Kampf? I'm like, whoa. I said, do you even know what this guy stands for? Do you know what he says? He goes, all I know is that he's a hate monger, and I refuse to listen or hear anything he says. I'm like, well, then your opinion is ridiculous. I said, he goes, well, I know he hates gay people. I said, okay, there you go. You're wrong right there. He's a sexual libertarian. He doesn't care who you sleep with. He just wants you to leave marriage alone. I go,
that's 100% right. So what, were these gay people?
No, they were just, I work with a lot of different types of people from all over the world. You know, I don't want to say where I work because, you know, I'd rather not.
Yeah, well, I guess the cover of the book says Trickle Up Poverty, Stopping Obama's Attack on Our Borders, Economy, and Security. I believe Obama's the hate monger. He's attacking our borders by letting illegal aliens flood into the country, including drug dealers and drug murderers. He's attacked our economy, and he's attacked our security. I mean, it's common sense that I'm right. If that makes me a hate monger, then join the club.
I asked them, I go, what has he ever said that was hateful? They couldn't answer me. They don't know what you believe.
Well, you see, this is what you have when you have prejudice. What you encountered here was the ugly face of bigotry. These are bigots in plain English. You know what the word prejudice means, Chris? You ought to take this back to work. You can say it to them calmly. Say, you know, I'm offended by what you said. You wouldn't read the book. You wouldn't look at the book. And yet you came in and you said he's this and he's that. But, you know, you have committed prejudice, the very thing you say you're not interested in doing. And they say, we're not prejudiced. The word prejudice means to prejudge. Are you aware of that, Chris?
Absolutely.
All right. So they're prejudiced men. What do you expect from them?
I even asked him. I said, look, I will lend you the book when I'm done. They're like, I said, just read 40, 50 pages of it. He goes, no, I won't read that. I'm like, well, then you have no argument. What are you arguing?
Ask him if they read the Quran after the 9/11 attacks. I know foolish liberal lawyers who went out and bought a Quran. I swear to God, after 9/11, I said, what the hell are you doing that for? They said, so we can better understand Islam. I swear to you.
Sure. Sure. It's unbelievable what's going on. It's just the stupidity. It's crazy.
Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to send you another copy of Trickle Up Poverty so you can give it to one of your good prejudiced friends. Stay in the line, okay? Let's go to the next callers. The Trump story is a big one. Do you think he's finished? Do you think that CNN and the White House joined together, which I think they did, by the way? Trump rose so fast and he became the clearest threat because the others are basically non-entities. Romney, non-entity. The others, I said, could never win. They're all non-entities. They can't win. None of them can win. None of them can win. Trump could win. Trump could still win, but Trump has to listen to Michael Savage. Trump has to come on the Savage Nation. Trump has to learn who he's dealing with. As brilliant as he is in his field, he does not know everything. And his advisors are Lilliputians compared to me. I know America better than any of the advisors Trump has hired. I don't care how smart they are as lawyers, how clever they may be in running a business. They don't know the first thing that they don't know as much as I do about the heartbeat of America. Let's put it to you that way. Remember, 3 hours a day for 17 years, this is all I've done. I have focused on the heartbeat of America, and I know what it is. And Trump is being misadvised. He can pull out from this attack by CNN. And the media and the government media complex that was orchestrated very carefully to undermine him and cut his legs out from under him. But not if he follows the advice of the people who sent him down that dead end of the birth issue. And I'll stick to that statement that I just made. It was a dead end. They put him on it and they did it to destroy him. Whoever put him on that road did it to destroy him. Sacramento, Frank, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, I just wanted to say, I think this whole Trump issue, like you said, is a non-issue, but I think it's part of the scam. We're being scammed. This is a White House media scam. Obama went 4 years, 2 years in a campaign, 2 years as presidency, and completely squashed the birther issue. But suddenly 4 weeks of Donald Trump and he caves. What gives? The media?
Well, I said because Trump was rising very fast on the birth issue. He rose ahead of the invisible Romney, and Obama's people decided to pull out their card now rather than during the debate before it got too big. So they pulled it out now. They had an orchestrated campaign using first CNN, which is an arm of the Obama administration, Oprah Winfrey, which is an arm of the Obama administration. And of course, don't forget she's from Chicago. She's part of the Chicago machine. She didn't get there because she's so beautiful and she's so talented. She got there because she knows people in high places. And so he used the government media complex to take out his biggest enemy right now, his biggest, competitor. Tell me who's left in the field who can beat him. Name one person who can beat him.
No, that's the point, is there is nobody left. But at the same time, what happened to Japan? Wasn't there a meltdown? Isn't there fallout that's hitting the nation? There's all these other issues that you mentioned. And
how about the 8 American servicemen who were shot to death 2 days ago? Did that make it to your local newspaper?
Yeah, how about the troops that are going into Libya? Well, no one's talking about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why they want to go after talk radio, because they understand this is the last bastion of a free press in this country. This and the Internet. Without talk radio and the Internet, you're living in a dictatorship. You're living in the Soviet Union of the past. That's my opinion. So which of these topics makes you the most queasy, anxious, angry? The war in Afghanistan, high taxes, national security, government spending, illegal immigration, the health care upheaval under Obama, government intervention in our daily lives, rising cost of gasoline and other fuels, unemployment, the flood of illegal aliens that are coursing across America, or is there another issue that is bothering you that is not being discussed by anyone? We're open for business on the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Let's take a call out of the Midwest. Dave in Wisconsin, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
I think we've all been there with Obama. We've had to work under a bad manager. We wonder, you know, how he got the job. He interviewed well. He gave the fake resume.
Then once he gets there, oh, good analogy. Right. He got the job as CEO by faking it. And then, now he knows he screwed up the company after 2 years. And now what happens?
Yeah, well, the problem is once he gets there, he takes credit for anything good. And then on the side, bad mouths the company. And that kind of attitude, you know, infects everything. pretty soon.
You know, you're right. Bad mouths the company. America's the company that he puts down. Right.
Exactly.
That's very interesting. It's a really good analogy. You're a businessman, Dave, I take it.
Somewhat.
But, Dave, you see, we're stuck. We live in a dictatorship in America. It's a dictatorship punctuated by some democracy every few years when the idiots, including myself, are allowed to go and, you know, press a screen. But other than that, we're stuck with them. In a real democracy of the kind that other countries have, they can call a vote of no confidence at any time and throw a government out. We don't have that. I believe if there was a vote of no confidence permitted right now, if we had a parliamentary system, Obama would be fired within 3 months. He'd be thrown out on his behind.
Exactly. Like even for I go to the store, I use my credit card. I have to show an ID for a couple dollar purchase. Well, Obama's got the nation's credit card. He finally produced a birth certificate from somewhere, but we know nothing about him. You know, he's spending our money without any kind of a background check on him. Where's that going to take us?
It's taken us where we are today, and it's going to get much worse unless he is stopped. And that's why I say only impeachment will stop this. Now, you say they're not going to do it. They're spineless. They couldn't win any. It doesn't matter whether they can ultimately impeach him. What matters is they could hold impeachment hearings during which all of this would be let out through discovery. The legal process is very clear. During an impeachment hearing, you can demand discovery, and we could start discovering certain things about his czars, certain things about him, certain things about Nancy Pelosi and her use of military jets under Obama. There's 1,000 things that would come out during impeachment hearings.
Exactly. He's supposed to be an example of the law, not above the law.
Okay, well, we're not alone. I mean, the majority of American people who actually think see this. And I have hope that he has been exposed. The problem is the Republicans don't exist as a figure. Tell me the figure on the Republican side who could even run. There's no one left. None of them can run. Who's there? Are you kidding? Newt Gingrich versus Obama? A retread? They put new white walls on his campaign. He's going to run again? He got a paint job and new white walls, and he's going to run again? Not going to happen. Schmuckabee finished. I said that a month ago. Schmuckabee was never viable. In his own mind, he was a candidate. Giuliani, are you kidding? West of the Hudson River, he's despised and laughed at. I told him that last time. So now he's poking his head out again, seeing if someone likes him again. It's nonsense. Look, Giuliani's a wonderful man. He did a great thing in New York 1,000 years ago, and so what? That doesn't make him presidential material. Thanks for the call. No, I'm not running for office. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Look, I got to take a deep breath for a minute. There's a very intimate relationship between talk show host and audience, especially after 17 years on the air and building an audience that continues to grow, unlike some in the medium. My audience actually grew. We have the ratings from WOR in New York as an example. It's on michaelsavage.com. And they went up over the year from 09 to 10, where we had the whole year's ratings. So I'm very satisfied to see that, especially in a time of flux and confusion out there. But let me say this. I get up every day and I think about what is it, what's this gift for? What am I doing this for? What is it all about? Like, one day, am I going to retire or, you know, leave it? And if not, what am I on the air for? I mean, it's not about the money for me. I could have retired many years ago, not because I'm fabulously wealthy, but because I have saved money and I don't have very high expenses. And then I think about things. I say, you know, I see a story in a local paper, a guy who's not much older than me. In fact, he's younger than me, who was a lead researcher in Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. Amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, of which I know a little bit because it was part of some of the work I did for my PhD many, many years ago in 1978. I was very interested in ALS because there's a disease that is akin to it, that mimics it, or is almost identical to it in terms of the lesions that form in the brain that occurs in certain islands of the South Pacific as a result of certain toxins that the people eat. So I became fascinated by it because I was an expert on plants. And so I got into it and studied it. And I say to myself, hey, Michael, you know, but for the grace of God and all that, tomorrow, you know, we don't know what tomorrow will bring for me, for you. Does anyone listening to this show know how much time they have left on this earth? So you got to understand, I come into this show with a very, very serious intent. And the intent is, in my opinion, my intent is to save this country from the slide towards socialism in plain language. Make it simple. You've heard it before, so it's not that a great revelation. But it is a great revelation. I was talking about socialism on the radio well over 10 years ago, long before Glenn Schmeck came along and put on the glasses that he saw nothing through, long before he got the blackboards and started to show you how smart he was. I was explaining that there are 16 to 17 varieties of socialism, and that any educated person knows that Obama's a socialist. But in my case, I am telling you, as an educated man and this educated in the subject, he's not a benign socialist. This is not a Bill Clinton type socialist. This is not a Tony Blair type socialist. This is a far extremist socialist, as close to Pol Pot that I have ever seen. Now you say, well, what? Now you're going off the deep end, Savage. You know, you had me listening. Now you said Pol Pot. We know that he led to the murders of millions of Cambodians, mainly the middle class. Well, why do I say that? Can I ask you to please listen to Mountain of Skulls, a monologue I did the other day? Because it starts with this. I said there was another mild-mannered professor who became infatuated with Marxism. He went to Paris to study Marxism at the University of Paris, came back to Cambodia, and he said, you know, this country's not fair. It's not fairly distributed. The wealth is not distributed fairly. I just simply want more fairness. I want a better society. The end of the road was a mountain of skulls. 2 to 3 million Cambodians were killed, the educated class, the teachers, the doctors, the lawyers, the engineers, the police chiefs. They were slaughtered by 15-year-old animals, the Khmer Rouge, the Red Scarves. We have thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not millions of unemployed youths who would gladly copy the Khmer Rouge. Be worried. Be very worried indeed.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Going to be the last time that I'm in town while Mayor Daley is still mayor. And so I just wanted, not just on behalf of the White House, but more importantly on behalf of the people of Chicago, on behalf of the mayor's constituents all these years, to say thank you. You have done an extraordinary job, and this city has been transformed because of your leadership.
So is Chicago the microcosm of what's coming in the United States of America? Welcome to the Savage Nation. If you care to talk about BO's BC, I don't know. I think we've said it all. But there are storms that are hit the south, the southeast. 300 people killed. I don't hear any calls for money being raised. I know they had little cups for the people of Indonesia, little cups for the people of Japan. All of the bleeding heart liberals on television were crying about the Japanese and the Indonesians. Have they been crying about giving out money to the poor people hit by the tornadoes? I don't think so. Is Anderson Cooper? Oh, I'm sorry. He's in Europe right now. He's going to the Royal Wedding. That's right up his alley, from West Hollywood to the Royal Wedding. I personally could care less about the royal wedding. I'm in favor of dissolving the royal family in England and divesting them of their holdings, with the exception of, like, they could each have one castle. But I'm not British, so I don't see the royal issue the way you do. In fact, I was raised as an anti-royalist. My father, having fled the communists of Russia, steeped me in anti-communism, but he also steeped me in anti-royalism. They hated the Tsar. They hated all things to do, all the trappings to do with royalty. And I was raised as an anti-royalist and as an anti-communist. See, people say, oh, you're an anti-communist, so you believe in a dictatorship of royalty. No, I despise any kind of authoritarian rulership. And I, for the life of me, cannot understand this whole royal business. I can't stand it. It makes my flesh crawl. If you remember, this country was created as a reaction to the authoritarianism and the evils of the British Empire. I mean, let's remind ourselves of the origins of America. And part of this arrogance of the British comes from their royalist attitude. Look what they did to the poor Irish people. Well, look what they've done to the poor Irish people, and look at their I don't have the right word. I wouldn't use the word, I don't want to use the wrong word. But let us say their arrogance, their superiority towards the Irish people, and the horrors they inflicted on the Irish people. So for those reasons, I'm not at all interested in which hag he marries. I'm not at all interested in the trappings and the coaches and the crowns and all of that nonsense. I have no idea why any American would be. But then again, I have no idea why anybody would listen to Oprah Winfrey or vote for Barack Obama. So therefore, I am still a party of none. I am not a party of one. I'm a party of none. The New Yorker defined me as a party of one. But I think I'm going to redefine myself as a party of none, because I don't even believe in parties. I believe at the end of the day in not even in joining or creating a party. I believe in individualism. Just leave me the heck alone. Let me do my own thing. So we go back now to what frightens you the most about Obama. The birth certificates being used by him to distract you, of course, from his real failures, from his real presidency. And I've listed some of the problems that he has inflicted upon this country. And I've asked you, which one of them worries you the most? And I gave you the list. I could repeat them if you want. I mean, you know, I'd be happy to do that. The fact of the matter is, Obama's ratings went up as a result of the BOBC thing. We know the birther issue was turning the country against Obama. We know that Trump was rising. In fact, Trump rose above all of the other individuals on the Republican side. And now the fact of the matter is, something has happened. Something has happened right now. Whether you want to say one side or the other, the fact of the matter is the agenda has forced the White House to react. They reacted. Score one for Donald. But the fact of the matter is, I frankly think Obama's ratings went up as a result of it. And I also think that Trump's candidacy has been torpedoed as a result of it. Now, Trump can still save his candidacy if he really is interested. The main thing he has to do, in my opinion, is stop listening to the, I would call him the Praetorian Guard, but that's not the right word. I have seen this going back to Bob Dole. They hire advisors who once worked for Democrats, who are, in fact, Democrats, and they say, well, don't worry about me voting for Democrats. I'm an objective guy, and I'll help you. They are not objective. Once a liberal Democrat, always a liberal Democrat, and once a liberal Democrat, always incapable of objective thinking. It may be true for people who are Republicans as well. I don't trust political advisors. I think that they're incapable of giving a real honest truth to a candidate. I believe that Donald Trump could save his candidacy if he was really interested in running, but he has to come on the Savage Nation. And frankly, you know what he has to do? Close his mouth and listen to you. I never said that before. Whether he'll ever come on the show again is up to anyone's guess. His assistant wrote us yesterday, and I read it on the air. I think he will, to save face at some point. But he can't talk. He can't come on the show and start going back to the China and the oil thing. We're not going to listen to that. Donald Trump has to come here, and he has to spend a half an hour, and he has to say, I want to hear what the Savage Nation is worried about. That's what I want to hear. He's got to listen and not talk. And then he could save his campaign. But if he's going to listen to the stealth Democrats who are advising him, he's finished. Chicago, Brian, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage. I think that right now we need to mobilize the Savage Nation and to unify behind one candidate. I think that is Donald Trump, as long as he comes on your show, and so we can beat Obama.
Well, that would be very nice. There is no other candidate. I don't think Romney can win. I think Romney will get trounced. Romney is exactly what Obama wants. He wants a punching bag, and he's going to get it in Romney.
Yeah, I think
that's all. Romney can't win. As nice a man as he is, a wonderful family. I've read his biography. I had dinner with him a year and a half ago in December. I'll never forget it. I was up in North Beach. He and I ate one-on-one alone. He, lovely man. I was proud to have spent that time with him. But I suspect that he's a middle-of-the-road Republican, which is exactly what we do not need at this time. Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. Moderation in the defense, who can finish that one? Moderation in the defense of is no virtue. It was Barry Goldwater. If you wanted to find me politically, you would say that I am a Goldwater Republican. But I'm not a Republican, I'm an independent, but I don't see any independent conservatives of the old West type that Goldwater was. Now, Goldwater, by the way, would have won the campaign at the time, was it not for the corrupt gangsters who ran Kennedy's administration. The corrupt gangster lawyers who ran the Kennedy machine stole the campaign, stole it out from under Goldwater in the primaries. They stole it from Goldwater. Goldwater actually won. They stole it. And that's why we had a Democrat win the election. So, there it is. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What do you want to talk about? What frightens you the most about Obama's lack of experience and qualifications? Which of the topics that I mentioned is the number one topic in your mind? The war in Afghanistan, economy, the jobs, the cost of gasoline, the flood of illegal aliens in America, the intrusion of this overbearing government in our daily lives. Which one of those things bothers you the most? Okay. I'm asking you. You're not calling, but here we go. I'm going to take the calls. You're going to hear in a minute. Patricia's been waiting on WOR in New York. Welcome to the program, Patricia. What's on your mind?
Well, to answer your question, the most cynical and vicious presidency and federal government I have ever seen in 60 years is this one. In the last week alone, you've had Boeing stalled by the National Labor Relations Board.
Yes.
So they couldn't build their plant in South Carolina.
They couldn't build their plant in the Carolinas, a non-union plant, in order to make a profit. That's correct.
That's right. You've also had, well, I'm going back now. Look what happened to the bondholders for the car companies. Now you've had 45% of our non-taxpayers, non-paying taxes because of government intrusion in their lives. There is a complete litany of offenses on this administration alone.
Well, we know what they are. It's not good radio to just stay it is. So what's your point?
You know what my real point is?
I don't. I'm asking you, what is it? What's your real point?
My real point is this. It's kind of off the question. I'm wondering, while I was waiting, why is this president, who has just declared that he's running again, allowed to appear on a show that's Oprah Winfrey's, but Donald Trump is not allowed to declare his candidacy because he has a show?
Well, it's because the FCC prohibits you from using your television or radio show as a vehicle for promoting a candidacy. For example, if I said to you, I'm thinking of running for the U.S. Senate, for example, I'd have to say I'm thinking about it, I'm exploring it, but the minute I said I'm running for office, I'd have to give up my radio career. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Well, because it's an unfair advantage. Of course the president's using the media like his own personal media. Of course it's like Pravda or Izvestia in the ex-Soviet Union. Of course it's outrageous to go on that on one show after another as a campaigner. It's sickening, frankly. But we're living in a strange time where inauthentic people are in the White House. There's nothing more I can say about it. Okay, so we can bellyache all we want, and we're not going to get anywhere. And if you want to call on any of these topics, you can call me at 1-800-449-8255. But I think what I'm going to do in the minute I come back, keep a few lines open because I'm going to go to something different. And you know what that's going to be? I'm going to take lifestyle questions. You have a question in your life, marriage, divorce, career, medication, what to eat, what not to eat, what vitamins to take. Call me at 1-800-449-8255. I'm going to put on the Dr. Savage hat right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Hi, this is Dr. Savage, your lifestyle coach here. We're going to shift away from politics for the moment and go to what's really important, and that's the personal. If you have a personal question, a lifestyle question, a life coach question that I can help you with, just give us a call at 1-800-449-8255. Remember, people are paying $500 an hour and more for this kind of advice. So if you're lucky enough to get through the call screener and get onto the Savage Nation, you're going to earn some of the best advice you've ever heard right here on the Dr. Savage Lifestyle segment. It is the Savage. No medical calls, please. I'm not going to give any medical advice because, A, I'm not a medical doctor, and, B, there's too much liability, and, C, it's not my problem. No, I mean, call a doctor for that kind of stuff, but I'll deal with the other stuff because I think politics is great. And, by the way, every time you ask me a lifestyle question, right, my answers are usually very political because I'm a very political person. I think that virtually everything is political. I can't think of virtually any aspect of a person's life that isn't political in some way. Let's start with the food you eat. If you ask me what I had for dinner and where I ate it, it would eventually devolve or actually evolve or revert to a discussion of politics, whether it's the politics of the where the shrimp came from, the fishing grounds, import quotas on shrimp, that kind of thing. So I'm a political animal. In that regard, everything is seen through a political eye. So when I say to you, I'm going to do lifestyle, don't worry about it so much. It's going to turn right back onto the political situation. Let's begin in Missouri. See, as an ex-New Yorker, I never understood why it's to some it's Missouri and to some Missouri. But I'm going to try the political correctness thing. Francesca from Missouri, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
For you.
Yes. What is it?
I am engaged to somebody who was married for 30 years, and I just wanted your opinion on how I'm supposed to stay out of what his life was before and establish our life separate from that, meaning, you know, he's got kids that are grown.
There's only one answer to that question. The answer is Viagra.
No, that's all good. That's the beauty. That department is...
I'm just saying, if you can keep the guy focused on that, all the rest of it will fall in place.
Oh, trust me. I've never been with... I mean, I was with somebody... I'm 35. He's 54. And he is the best I've ever been with. There's no Viagra involved, and he's the happiest. We both are, but it's the outside influences.
What do you mean? The ex-wife keeps trying to tamper with the relationship?
Well, no, not the relationship, but it's always the kid, you know, who's 20 and still at home.
Well, but he's a father. Look, this is the problem, Francesca. A man who's older than you, who has a grown family, is still a father. He's going to want to take care of his children, and you can't be so possessive that you don't want to let him even have a relationship with his own children. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I guess I never had.
Isn't it you who is somewhat possessive here? What is your intent, to cut him off from all relationships with his children?
Absolutely not. No.
Well,
no.
But that's what's going to happen. If he starts to get that feeling, he's going to get a little, you know, move away from you.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen.
All right, so what I say is, you know, let the guy, you know, give him a wide range here. He's got to relate to the children. He's probably still has a relationship with the ex-wife, financial or some other way, doesn't he?
Well, yes. I mean, after 30 years, how can you not?
Well, all right. So you're accepting of the fact that, what, they still have business interests together?
Business interests, no.
But what does he talk to her about?
Well, if the daughter and her get in an argument, because the 20-year-old daughter still lives there, so, you know, she'll call him up and say, I'm having issues with her, so, you know, maybe you can talk to her.
Okay, so the mother calls up issues with the daughter, so they're using the child to keep him in contact with him. You got to expect this. He was a married man. He can't cut them off and throw them away like they're used potato chips. Just remember what I said, Levitra.
Savage.
Well, Obama's right. We don't have time for silliness or carnival barkers. If only he'd look in the mirror, we'd be a lot safer as a nation. Anyway, I've shifted a little bit into some lifestyle questions and answers for a few minutes. Let's take another one right here on the Savage Nation. Sacramento Lee, what's on your mind?
Michael.
Yes.
I'm redecorating my office, and
yes,
my wife wants to paint it coral. I want to paint it Merlot, and my gun case is this beautiful, rich mahogany case. Do you decide this problem?
Is this a real question?
It is, absolutely.
Well, look, whose office is it?
It's mine. I want a man's office. I don't.
Who has to live in the office most all the time? You would, right? Not your wife.
Yes, of course.
So what is it? Why does she insist on her color scheme?
Well, she felt that the mahogany would pop better off the wall with the coral background rather than the Merlot.
And you don't like coral because it's like a rental color.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, if you get it wrong, you get those pink overtones, and that's exactly what I.
Yeah, it looks like a rental office. Maybe she's thinking of getting rid of you and renting out the office. You never know. No, it's like a rental beige. I always worry about people who redecorate with neutral colors. I said, what are you thinking? Why is it neutral? You live here. What color do you really like? Why are you going for a neutral color?
Exactly. I mean,
no, I myself tend towards the dramatic. I like burgundies. I like very bold color schemes. So you want which color?
It's a Merlot. It's a pretty dark, rich red color.
Better known as like burgundy, right?
Burgundy, exactly.
Right, but you're in Sacramento, so they renamed the paint Merlot, but it's burgundy. In other words, if you went to buy a Buick back in the 1950s, you wouldn't have said, I'd like a Merlot Buick, I'd like a burgundy Buick, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, burgundy, because that's very Bordello-like. That could be why she doesn't like it.
That could be an issue. A lot of my collection is brass objects, so I think that they'll look really good against that dark color.
I do, too. And what you should say to her, is she listening to the show?
No, but she really will follow what you say.
I would suggest you say to her in a very nice way, you know, honey, I really like, what's the color, coral?
Coral, yeah.
I really like the color coral, but that's more for a bedroom. I have to spend my working life in this color. I like a cave-like feel where I feel secure, and I want to act like a caveman for you so I can defeat the enemy and make more money.
She'll love that.
Okay. Thanks for the call. I swear I love these segments. This is wonderful fun. It relieves me from having to talk about the naked Marxists in the White House. You know, against Sacramento. What is it? I have one station? New York. Hasida in New York. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Is it Hasida or Chasida?
Hasida, that, you know, guttural Hebrew sound.
Yes. Yes. Hasida like Hasidim. What's on your mind?
So I'm a recent grad from a SUNY, State University of New York, and I've been job hunting. I've had some great internships, great experience, and I've just keep hitting walls. I was wondering what your advice was as, you know, recent grad in this economy.
Very, very, very bad. Very, very hard to be a college grad looking for work. It must be awfully depressing. I've been there. I have been through it most of my life until I entered radio and everything changed. But I remember getting out of college, Queens College. It was a bachelor's degree. I didn't know what I wanted to do. The kids who I went to college with were either going to medical school or dental school or law school, right? And those who couldn't do anything else went into journalism. But you're asking what you should do in a job market where there are no jobs. So let's start with the obvious, and you'll say I've done it already. Are there any family members who are successful, prominent business owners?
Yes, and I've been speaking to them, working the connections, and it's...
Let me explain something. We had a family member who we don't talk to, who got out of Harvard Law School 15 years ago. You know what they taught her in her seminar, her last seminar? Look for your first case within your family. In other words, sue someone in your family. I swear to God, that's what they were teaching lawyers from Harvard 15 years ago. There's nothing wrong with using your family connections to get started. Can you go to work? You don't have to. Look, Hasina, you can't ask. You got to demand. You got to lean on him and say, look, there's no jobs out there. I'm super qualified. I'm smart. I can work for you. I can be better than any of your employees. I need you to hire me. You got to be very demonstrative about it.
Right. It's always that fine line, though, of, you know, being too aggressive. And
oh, no. This is your survival. That's not too aggressive. What are they going to do, say no? Or they're going to say Hasita's a bad girl? She's mean to me? She talk loud to me? Are they going to say that? Who are they going to say it to?
Right. I mean, the truth is, what I want to go into human resources, ideally. And no, unfortunately, no one in my family really has connections in that arena.
I missed that. Connections in what?
Human resources.
Well, that's like an iffy job. Unless they own a big corporation and can put you into a job, how are you gonna deal with human resources? Don't they have a business? What kind of business do they have?
Most of them are like doctors, accountants, lawyers, typical.
Well, wait a minute. So that's not so bad. So you can't work for a doctor because then you're only going to be a file clerk, right? You can't work for a lawyer because they're going to hire a paralegal. That makes you only a file clerk. So actually, unless they own a business, there is no opportunity in the family, is there?
Yeah, that's true.
However, don't lawyers have clients?
Right.
And don't doctors treat patients? Think of the network of your family members and how extensive it may be. If you went to your lawyer, cousin, uncle, whatever he is, and say, I need a job. I need you to talk to your clients. I'm sure you could find something for me. Then you're going to open up a cornucopia of opportunity for yourself.
Okay, interesting.
All right, there it is. So lean on your family. That's what family is for. That's what family is for at the end of the day. That's what family is for. They're supposed to help a young person who's just starting out. That's the way it works. Okay. Here's a beautiful call coming up. Paul in Chicago, what's on your mind, Paul?
Thank you, Dr. Savage, for all you do.
Thank you.
I'm having a little problem coping with my mortality today because I see that Anne Margaret is turning 70.
I know what you mean. Whenever time I look at Brigitte Bardot, I don't know what to do to myself. Because when I was a young man, she was a sex goddess.
When I was a young man, I saw Anne Margaret perform in Vietnam. So now I'm having a problem. She's 70.
What do you mean? You were a troop?
Yes, sir.
Oh, and you saw her performing like that movie? What was that movie where they performed that Coppola did on the stage by the river?
She was in Vietnam with Bob Hope in 1968.
So what do you mean? You're really not feeling good about getting older because of that, or you're just pulling my leg?
Well, I'm just pulling your leg.
I see. But you're not doing badly for a 64-year-old, are you?
No, I'm not doing badly at all. But you know, it is a wake up call to your mortality when you see someone like that turning 70. I think.
So what you do is you do 5 more push-ups a day, cut out the pasta, stop drinking beer. And get the Viagra and a toupee, and you'll be in business.
Thank you, doctor.
You know, Brigitte Bardot was such a stunningly beautiful girl. And you look what time and gravity did to that woman. It's frightening. I mean, I'm glad she's an animal rights activist. I like that part of her being. And I know she was one of the first people in Paris 20 years ago to talk about the Muslims taking over France. And how they were converting the churches into mosques and blah, blah, blah. They charged her with a hate crime for that. She was a gutsy lady. Still is. But, you know, if ever a burqa was designed for someone, it was for the elder Brigitte Bardot. You know, there is an argument for using a burqa, but it's unfortunately used on young girls rather than old girls. Is that why it was originally developed? I wonder. I mean, I'm trying to be fair-minded about it. You know, at a certain point, everyone could use a burqa. In Hawaii, they wear muumuus, right? A muumuu is a burqa without a head covering when you think about it. It makes a great deal of sense for a man and a woman, incidentally. The Middle Easterners have the right idea. They don't wear pants with a belt. Where every meal you eat, you have to let the belt out, pull the belt in, and your gut hangs over your belt. It's disgusting. They wear a shroud. So you don't know if they knocked off a whole mutton that day or they ate a hummus for lunch. They wear a shroud, so it doesn't matter if you go up or down a little bit. It's a human being expands and contracts. We're not a fixed entity. Why don't we start wearing shrouds in America? It might be nice. It certainly would increase the business for the dry cleaners, I'll tell you that. Virginia, Robert, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Hello,
Hello, Mr. Savage. Robert here in Virginia Beach. I'm going to talk real quick before the F-18s start flying over Oceania Air Base and you can't hear me.
Yes.
So, anyway, I got this son. I'm an absentee father for the last 15 years. Been always in his life, in his sister's life with the child support, and I go see them occasionally, and he's a triathlete in Louisville, Kentucky. He's a nursing student. And
right.
Occasionally when I go up there, I'll write an article and they will print it, and those are good things. But I got a
right.
lot of anxiety about going to see this wedding and my ex-wife. And
so what is the question? Should you go to the wedding?
Well, I've committed. I'm in it. And
so what is the question? I don't know. Is there a question for me, or you just want an event?
The question is, man, this anxiety thing is come on, this is a life thing. You know, can I listen to your show all the time? I mean,
what you say? What you mean? You're suffering anxiety and you don't know how to deal with it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a little nervous about it. I've got a lot of family members coming there to see him.
Yeah, but it's a temporal anxiety. It's associated with the wedding, correct?
No question about it. He loves.
So it's not like you've suddenly developed a free floating anxiety that's going to be with you forever, correct? It has a finite attachment to an event.
No, sir.
All right. So no. This is very important. You're not suffering clinical anxiety in the sense that it's been with you, it's going to be with you, and it's always going to be with you, and you don't know what to do with it. You're suffering a temporal anxiety reaction to a real event, and that real event is coming up when?
July 16th.
Well, all right, so that's quite you got a couple of months now of concern and worry. It's like a man worried about anything else, whether it be dental surgery, an operation, or anything else. So haven't you coped with anxiety in the past before for an upcoming event? What have you done?
In the past, hit some wine, but I don't do dope. Never have. Old Marine, and I just don't do dope. You know, hit the wine every now and then, but that doesn't work. You know,
No. Actually, alcohol only makes anxiety much worse. It depresses you, and then you come out of the depression, out of the stupor, and you feel worse than before. It usually disrupts your sleep patterns if you're not a regular drinker. You'll wake up 3 a.m. with a pounding heart and a sweat anxiety. So I'm going to suggest some herbal stuff because it really works. It saved my life many years ago. Passion flower herbal tincture is amazing. It's out there. There's some great herbal companies that make it. One of these days I'll put together my own mixture of several different things, but I don't have the orientation to go into the business of doing so right now. But passion flower herbal tea, passion flower tincture is one that I'd recommend. There are others that you can use. You know that common chamomile tea, if it's really good chamomile tea, will actually act like a 2 milligram diazepam, an old line tranquilizer.
Kava?
No. Chamomile tea is a wonderful sedative, and it's a very mild one. You can buy it right now in a supermarket.
Okay.
But I'd watch out for two things. I'd make sure that you get a brand. Don't buy an off-brand. Don't buy some schlocky, cheap chamomile. Try to get a company that's reputable and something that has a dated package on it, and see if there's anyone selling that tea with a certified amount of the active principles in the tea, meaning the highest quality you can get. I can guarantee you make a cup of that. But there's a trick to I don't want to go into it in great detail. Any herbal tea that you make, there's a trick to it, or else it won't work at all. People don't even know this. But it's my feel. Okay, you boil the water, right? Obvious. You got the tea bag ready. It's in the cup. When you pour that water over the tea bag in the cup, you have to put a top on the cup, like the saucer should go on top of the cup, for at least 10 minutes. Don't let the steam rise out of the cup while the tea bag is in the cup and it is brewing, because the steam will take out all of the water-soluble components from the mixture, which is exactly what you need in order to get the effects from the tea. You follow me?
Yes, sir.
All right, well, there's your answer. Try chamomile tea and get back to me in 2 days. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I'm going to take a call right now out of Washington, D.C. on WTNT, my affiliate in the heart of the monster. All of you politicians listening to the show, just know this about me. If I had to do it all over again, I'd be a talk show host. Seth on TNT, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage,
I'm actually in
the okay, you're in the state. All right, so you're up in where? Seattle area?
Spokane.
What's the station you're listening on?
I think it's KJRB, I think.
Okay, so what's your question?
Well, you see, I'm actually 23 years old, and I actually am one of the very few that got a professional job right out of college. I graduated in 09. And I'm getting ready to pop the question to my girlfriend I've been dating for about 4 years, getting ready to get married. But this job I've got, they're pushing me for more and more responsibility, and it's a sales job that I run the eastern side of Washington. Pretty soon they're thinking maybe of pushing me to cover another state, which means I'd be gone about a week out of every month. And I'm wondering if you had any advice on most businessmen that I know that are gone all the time, they don't seem to have long-lasting marriages.
It's a conundrum, but you're living in a time that requires doing what's necessary to survive. Now, before you suggest to your fiancé that you get married, I think you just simply have to clear the air. I'm going to be on the road, what, 1 week a month, you said?
Yeah.
Well, you know what that's going to do to the relationship. It's going to definitely hurt it to some extent. But on the other hand, it could also strengthen it. You know, this honey pie every day together doesn't last forever, to be very honest with you. And a little absence does make the heart grow fonder. The question is the girl capable of sustaining herself during the week you are gone without getting into mischief? I mean, you have to discuss that with her. And by mischief, I don't mean physical necessarily. I mean mental mischief as well. She could wind up going off the rails by not having. Does she have a career or profession of her own?
She's in the banking industry.
Well, then she has to accept the fact that a career today requires travel. Corporations demand more and more of people, particularly of travel, and that you have to sacrifice in order to advance in your career, and you're willing to do so if she's willing to go along with you in doing so. There are ways to stay in touch while you're away today that weren't existing before. You have the internet, you have the email, Twitter. It wasn't around when I had to travel when I was young, and believe me, I had to do the Willie Loman too. I hated it. I don't like hotel rooms. I don't like traveling, but I did what I had to do. I had to leave two young children in order to go to live in Pittsburgh for a week a month in order to take a job that I love very much, but I did it. And why did I do it? Because I had to do it. It was a great opportunity. And you have to do it, too. I don't think you have a question here. In this economy, go for it. They like you. You're good at the job. You're going to wind up a regional manager and then probably a national sales manager. How can you say no to that?
Thank you, Dr. Savage.
You're welcome. See? In other words, put the career ahead of your personal life, which I know goes against the grain of what I'm supposed to say. But it's a different time. We don't have the leisure that we had 10 years ago of saying everything will work out. No, everything often doesn't work out. Very often everything doesn't work out at all. And so you have to understand survival comes before almost everything else. Now, that doesn't mean you should shaft the family or shaft the children, but let's not beat it to death. You got to make a buck, do what you have to do. That's all. Great calls. Look at this. Judy in Florida, last one of the hour. Go ahead, please. Quick, fire away.
Michael, thank you. I'm coming to you, first of all, not only are you wise, but you are...
I have only 30 seconds, Judy. Fire the question. Judy, 30 seconds.
Michael, I'm taking my baby cubby to the vet and the groomers, and I panic taking her. She starts to shake. I need anti-anxieties for this.
Just to go get your dog washed?
Yes.
I don't know what to say. Then let it stink. Stay home with it. Why take it to the groomer? Take it into the garage and get some soap for a dog and give it a bath in the sink. And that's the end of it with a hairdryer. Well, how hard is it to figure that out?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listen up. We have to talk about the birther controversy because Obama's stoking the controversy and keeping it alive. He goes on Oprah Winfrey. He goes on various and other shows, a rally in New York, and he's talking about it all the time. And, of course, yesterday he released his birth certificate after months of refusing to do so, actually years. He claimed he did so in order to put an end to the conflict because we do not have time for this kind of silliness. When he did this, I, Michael Savage, told you that he had not released his birth certificate in order to end the controversy, but I think to stoke the fires of this controversy. Why? In order to distract Americans from his many, many failures as a president. And sure enough, there he is today everywhere in the media, not talking about the economy, not talking about national security, not talking about the 9 American soldiers shot in the back by an Afghani policeman yesterday, not talking about how to stop China from destroying our currency and our manufacturing base. There he was again, talking about his birth certificate. He joked about being born in Hawaii and bringing his idea to fundraiser in New York. He went on to the daytime TV talk show hosts. Show and joke with her that he remembered being born in Hawaii. He's deliberately bringing up the topic over and over again because he knows people are going to talk about it. And he knows that if they're talking about his birth certificate, they will not be discussing his failure to get the troops out of Iraq, his failure to end a bloody war in Afghanistan, which he refuses to let the troops fight aggressively enough, his failure to preserve the dollar as a strong international currency, his destruction of the American democracy through a series of unelected Marxist policy czars, his destruction of the U.S. military through budget cuts and social engineering, his destruction of the U.S. economy and American jobs. I would like to say to some members of my audience that if you focus on where Obama was born, you're missing the fundamental fact that he's a Marxist and that he is destroying our military and economy. Don't be distracted and don't let Obama stoke the birth of fires while America burns around us. And now on to the news of the day. Big news, storm, death in the south, tornadoes, floods, unimaginable destruction, 280 people dead. Now come the floods. The economy is slowing, inflation is growing. Dollar has dropped to the lowest level since 2008. Gold sets new records, silver hits all-time high. U.S. confidence plunging. According to Gallup, only 27% say the economy is growing. Walmart says our shoppers are running out of money. Superman to renounce U.S. citizenship. No kidding. Where's Ahmadinejad? The Iranian parliament of the throwbacks is preparing for Ahmadinejad impeachment. I wonder what that's all about. Academics claim that calling animals pets is insulting. And for those of you who love multiculturalism, a man has beheaded his girlfriend in front of classmates at a university in India. Bring in more. Bring in more. Because this country's just too white, too European. CBS anchor says Trump is racist. I guess if you criticize a black, you're a racist today. So that means if you salute a black person's politics, you're not a racist? Is that the only option open for a white man? And look who's saying it. A CBS anchor? An anchor of what? Bob Schieffer? That throwback? Bob Schieffer died in 1952, as far as I'm concerned. And yet he attacked Donald Trump for casting doubt on the president's academic records. Go, Trump, go. Go, Trump, go. Yesterday, Trump called on the president to release his college transcripts. Reacting to this call, Schieffer, the throwback, said, "That's just code for saying he got into law school because he's black." Well, it's true, Schieffer. How do you think he got into Harvard? How do you think he became an editor of the Law Review, you schmuck? In his own biography, Obama admitted that his early grades weren't good, but he refuses to release his college transcripts. Ever since then, there's been rumblings from people such as myself and Trickle Up Poverty calling for the transcripts to prove he earned his places at Columbia and Harvard. I'm still waiting for it. I'd rather see his college records than watch the royal wedding. And now quickly, let's go to michaelsavage.com and see what's on there. Marines get trained on accepting gay recruits. That's in the middle of a war. If a Marine spots two men in his battalion kissing, he should react as if he were seeing a man and a woman. Isn't that great? See diversity, how wonderful it is? U.S. charity warns North Korea food will run out in June. Well, maybe we can support North Korea now. Barbasol Bernanke finally admits the deficit is not sustainable. Ha! how'd the bee get in his bonnet? He's the last to know. You hear this? The Federal Reserve chairman is the last one to know that the Federal Reserve and the deficit is not sustainable, rather.
But somebody told him.
Michael Savage says the redistribution of wealth rhetoric from Obama can lead to a mountain of skulls. And Syria, who just shot hundreds, well, they're going to become the newest member of the UN Human Rights Council. I swear to God. China unveils rival to International Space Station. Multi-capsule outpost in space. You hear this? And from England, Tony Blair, remember him? It's the third way. He says being too PC led us to shelter Muslim terrorists. He should have added and banned Michael Savage from Britain. You lousy bum, you. Afghan Christians to be deported despite death fears. Two asylum seekers into England say they fear the Taliban will kill them because they converted to Christianity. They're going to be sent back to Kabul by the cowards in England who are useless. Did you know that 8 U.S. troops were shot in the back by an Afghani yesterday? Oh, it didn't make it to your newspaper. You're busy laughing at Obama's tepid jokes. Sean in Austin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. I had told your screener that I have an interpretation of your dream, sir.
I'd love to hear it.
Sir, I believe that interpretation is that, how can I say it, your presence represents a generation that is far gone. And your son's presence, it represents the current generation that is living at hand. And that is, and how can I say it, it's like your presence is God pleading to the current generation, here is the way that I can restore this country. And it's like, how can I feel such a Christian symbolism that God is just was using your symbolicness as a voice to the current generation. Sir, I've been listening to you for about the last 6 years. I had no interest in talk radio whatsoever. I'm an African American and I'm 36 years old, and you won me over, and ever since I've been screaming and yelling to others in a very civil way, this is the voice that we need to begin to listen to. I've been, particularly other African Americans, I get shunned a lot, but I will not give up. But
well, it's very hard to step out of the fold, and most it's not limited to your ethnic group. Most ethnic groups are very clannish and very, very closed to any outside ideas. I understand that. It's the same in any other ethnic community, and it's very hard to be a man who steps out from the familiar within his own group. So don't expect to make any friends, Sean, by trying to trumpet ideas which may not be acceptable to your peers. You know, you're going to lose friends rather than gain them, Sean. Sometimes it's better to just keep it to yourself because you can't afford to lose the support of your own community.
Sir, at this particular stage in my life, I feel like I'm in a sinking ship, and I'm ready to lose friends that I just don't need.
All right, well, I'll tell you the truth. I threw away friends 20 years ago to enter radio. I had to dump my old friends. They were holding me down. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. There have been investors who have been betting against the nation even before the disaster. In fact, Commonwealth Opportunity Capital, a small hedge fund of only $90 million in Los Angeles, invested $200,000 and made a profit of several million dollars on Tokyo Electric. No sane nation in the world would permit this kind of speculation on human tragedy. It is an anomaly in the capitalist system to permit this. Hold on, I'm getting something for you. It is an anomaly in the capitalist system to permit this kind of rapacious piracy. And if we had a sane government that was not totally, wholly owned, I believe that the governments of America are virtually wholly owned subsidiaries of the hedge fund operators. And I pointed this out in Trickle-Up Poverty, Nightmare on Wall Street was a very important chapter, and I'm not going to read you from the chapter, but I try to tell you what was killing America and what is now killing the world. It's a few speculators in plain English. And unless they are reined in, there's going to be nothing left in the world. They are like the, remember the old Beatles cartoon, The Yellow Submarine, with the Know-Nothing Man? I don't know if you remember that. It goes back so long. Huh? The Yellow Submarine. the Nowhere Man, he sat on the top of a mountain with a large trumpet for a mouth, and he started sucking up the world and eventually sucked himself up into his own horn. That, to me, is what the hedge fund operators are. They have to be controlled. And many of you are so naive that you think that the words free market have some inherent magic in them. You've eaten the lie of Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck, who are basically shills for the Republican Party, as far as I can tell, or they're actually naive and don't even know what they're talking about. You don't understand there's no such thing as a free market. When you have rules that are broken, that's not a free market. A free market needs controls. It's like saying a freeway should have no rules on it. And you should be able to drive at any speed you want. You should have no stop signs, no lights on a highway. You can't have that. You'd have more accidents, right? Same thing in a stock market. Of course you need trading rules to constrain some of the more vicious piranha fish. And unless we have them put in place, we're going to see these rapacious hedge fund capitalists betting not only against countries like Japan going through its worst crisis since World War II, but betting against America, which they do on a daily basis. Who do you think is shorting the dollar? Who do you think is screwing around with our economy so that we can never climb out of this wreck that they caused to begin with? The very same people who put Obama in power. Great callers. I got the best callers in the world on this radio show. You know, there are differences, I'm telling you. There are differences in radio shows. I think that I get some of the best callers in the country. I've said it before. And I know why, too. I don't have to say it, all right? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Ohio Bob, you're on the Savage Nation.
What I really like about President Obama is his desire to lead us in his actions and trying to get us reduce our dependence on foreign oil as far as conservation and putting in green technologies. And
that's very good, Bob. And how long off do you think it is until we can actually use green technologies to power our power plants and to heat our homes and run our cars? You are aware that this technology is not yet here.
It's here in a lot of ways. I was able to, when Jimmy Carter was in office, I was able to...
Let me ask you something. Do you own an electric car, Bob, like a Chevy Volt?
I'm going to buy a Volt. As soon as they come out,
you're going to buy a Volt because you're a do-gooder and you're a man who believes in saving the environment. That's very noble. Are you aware that it takes more energy to create the electricity to run that car than it does from the energy from oil and gasoline? Are you aware of the statement that I just made, the reality of that? In other words, where do you think the electricity comes from?
Okay, because in Ohio here, we burn lots of coal.
Bob, try to follow the discussion. Try to use logic. You understand that an electric car needs to be plugged in to work, correct?
My point is,
I'm asking you a question. Do you know where the electricity comes from, Bob? Or do you think it just comes out of the air?
It comes from a coal plant in Ohio.
Okay, so to run that coal plant produces what, Bob?
Electricity.
Yes, Bob, and what are the waste products of running the coal plant, Bob?
Michael, look, you have the equivalent...
Oh, no, you won't answer a question. Don't say, Michael, look, I'm not your son. You realized that you couldn't win the checkers game, so you went to another checkers game. But let's stop playing backgammon with each other, Bob. If you want to be a fool and tell yourself that he's saving the earth, you can say that, but it's not true, Bob. It is not true scientifically. It's not true economically because the technology is not yet here. I would love to be driving a hydrogen car. The technology isn't here. And little electric cars cost more and produce more pollution in the long run because of the production of electricity than does the use of oil and gasoline, Bob. That's the reality right now.
Mike, I care about getting us off Middle East oil. Now, I know
you do. Then why is it that your hero stopped drilling in the Gulf of Mexico? That's not from the Middle East.
What?
Yes, you heard me. Don't make me repeat myself. Don't play the standard liberal trick. What, your hearing aid suddenly went out? You said what? You want to get us off Middle East oil as if that's the whole sine qua non of the argument. Then why did he stop the drilling in the Gulf of Mexico? That's not foreign oil.
Because it hurt the economies of New Orleans so much. Mike, if you care...
Whoa. What are you talking about? It's Obama who ruined the economies of New Orleans by stopping the drilling. Moreover, why doesn't he drill for oil in the Alaskan slope if he wants to get us off foreign oil?
B- Because as long as we have the oil Jones and don't turn all our attention to these technologies that we don't need this oil, how are we going to
do it? Bob, you're way out of your league. You see, you're a decent person, I'm sure, and you want to do good. But as you well know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. The technology is not yet here to drive our homes to heat, to drive our cars to heat our homes. Don't you understand that?
Mike, how much gasoline do you use when you go out in your boat to support?
Bob, you're not following the discussion in any way. You just have your head in the sand and you want to believe Obama's doing the right thing because you're an idealist. You're an old hippie idealist. And you think that because you voted for him, you don't want to, you know, admit you made a mistake. That's all, Bob. The fact of the matter is it costs more to run an electric car in terms of pollution, meaning you add up the electrical generation, than it does to get oil producing gas, Bob. But since you didn't go to school and you don't understand the science, we have to disengage from each other. When I'm in the mood, I can do radio like no one else on earth. But, you know, like when I'm not in the mood, it's hard. You can't do it every day the same way. Some days, you know, you feel ebullient and the words just roll off your tongue and you feel great. And you could, like, roll the politics into the humor and it's a great day. And I'm in that mood today. Tomorrow will be the manic depressive thing tomorrow after the curry and no good.
Savage.
You know, China's on everyone's mind. Terry Miller is the director for the Center for International Trade and Economics, and he's former ambassador to the United Nations. He's here today on the Savage Nation to talk about the implications for China's economy that will soon surpass that of the United States. Ambassador Miller, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. It's great to be here.
The IMF recently issued a report saying that China's economy will surpass that of the United States in 2016. What is that really going to mean for the average American and for the world?
Well, I think it means a lot less than people might imagine. It would be wrong for the American people to regard the Chinese economy as a big threat to the United States. The United States is still far wealthier, and we as individuals have a per capita income that's on the order of 10 times higher than the average Chinese person's income. China's a big place. They have a big population, so their economy in the aggregate is going to be producing a lot of things, but even there, the United States still produces about the same level of manufacturing goods as the Chinese do. We produce far more in services in the service economy than the Chinese do. And in any case, I just don't know why we would want to consider the Chinese people as a threat to us. It's to the advantage of the United States for individual Chinese people to gain some sort of level of development and wealth that's higher than they have now. I don't think any Americans would want to live in a world that had an entire country or an entire continent that was impoverished.
Do you actually believe the leftist media hype that the age of America has come to an end?
Oh, that's just nonsense, and it's completely in the control of the United States. We're doing a lot of things right now. The administration is doing a lot of things that really make no sense in terms of helping the U.S. economy. Our unemployment rate's very high. We've got an incredibly abusive regulatory environment. The capital markets are messed up in the United States because of government intervention, but it's in our completely within our power as a society to fix that. And that's where we need to look, getting our own house in order. And if we do that, our economic development is going to be just fine, both now and in the future.
Will there be more calls to replace the dollar as the international reserve currency?
Well, there might be some calls for that to happen. There have been historically because there are some advantages to the United States in having the dollar be the currency of international commerce. A lot of people want to hold dollars, and that's to our advantage. We get goods and services in exchange for those dollars that go overseas. But there really is no alternative to the dollar out there right now. People talk about the euro, but that currency, we've seen its weakness recently, particularly obvious. The economies of Greece and Italy and Ireland, Spain are under such pressure. So I don't think the euro is a viable alternative. The renminbi, the Chinese currency, is certainly not a viable alternative at this point. Nobody's going to have confidence and faith and confidence in the value of the renminbi. It's totally controlled by the Chinese government. They can make it rise or fall for political reasons or whatever reasons they want, and that's not something you want to put your trust in. So I think the dollar as the international currency is still in a very strong position and likely to stay that way for a long time.
How much of China's growth is just artificially inflated numbers?
Well, they're producing a lot more than they used to produce. They've had massive amounts of government-directed investment, particularly in the export sector. And they've also had rapid population growth and rapid growth of the labor force. But all of that's going to come to an end. The growth in their labor force, because of the one-child policy, is going to turn around, and they're going to actually have a contraction. They've got high unemployment rates right now, much higher than the United States, perhaps twice as high as the unemployment in the United States. So that's a problem for them. They're going to have a resource shortage at some point in the future. Their land is not as resource-rich as the land in the United States, so that's going to be a problem for them. In fact, we see the Chinese going around the world trying to buy up resources, and that's something we need to keep an eye on and make sure that there's no monopolization by them of any resources of natural resources. But that's certainly not a problem at this point. It's just something to keep an eye on at the future. We're dealing with a competitor in China that's a very large economy. They've been growing rapidly, though that growth is probably going to taper off. And we need to be mindful of what they're doing. But more than anything else, we need to get our own policies right and liberate the energy of the American people. Our economy has no parallels, not only in the world right now, but in the history of the world. And if you allow the American people the economic freedom to make their own decisions about where to invest, where to work, and you get the government off the back of the people, there are really no limits to what the American people can accomplish economically.
Doesn't China have their own massive property bubble that's about to burst?
Oh, they do. There's been a huge run-up in property values, and that's just one of this very long list of problems that China has. It's great to look at China, these growth rates of 10% or more that they've been having over the years, but there have been similar cases in the past. You look at Japan, they had a run-up of economic growth that was just as impressive several decades ago, and yet now in Japan, we've had the last 20 years of it's been characterized by stagnation. It's just not probable or not plausible even to think that China will continue these rapid growth rates into the future. I hope they do continue some level of economic growth because their people need that. But I don't think you're going to see China increasing at these 10% per year rates on and on and on and on into the future.
Okay, so in your mind, what's the best way to turn America's economy around?
Well, we need, first of all, to get our government spending under control. From the end of World War II to the present, government spending in the United States has averaged under 20% of our economy. But in the last 2 years, that's gone up to 24% and then 25% of the economy. The federal government is just soaking up resources out of the private sector that could be used for investment, to create jobs, and to enhance the economic livelihood of American citizens. We have got to get that under control. We've got to get our national deficit under control. We can't continue borrowing in the same way we've been borrowing. We need to get our tax rates under control. The United States has one of the least competitive corporate tax rates of any country in the world. Japan's rate is slightly higher than ours, but Our corporate income tax rate is higher than every other country in the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development. Those are the developed countries. That means that businesses are not going to locate in the United States. If they have a choice, they're going to locate somewhere else where the tax burden is less. That means those jobs won't be created in the United States. So we've got to get that under control. Then we've got the regulatory burden. It's very hard for companies to know where to invest or how much to invest right now. They don't know what's going to happen with this health care bill that's been passed. That creates massive uncertainty and the potential for huge increases in expenses for employers. We've got energy regulation out there, the potential for a cap and trade bill that will raise energy costs, and that means companies don't know whether they can make a profit or not from the money they invest. So again, we've got the government not helping people. We've got the government in the way, and we need to get it out of the economy and open up the opportunities for the American people to get this economy going again.
Okay, and what's the biggest factor for China's growth over the next 5 years?
Oh, I think it's going to continue to be the export sector. That China has invested so much of its government's resources in building these massive export-oriented industries, and they really don't have any other options in the short run for keeping employment as high as possible and trying to keep their growth rates up. Over time, we need to see the Chinese move much more of their emphasis to increasing domestic consumption and building up a free financial system. Right now, credit is totally directed in the Chinese economy by the government. That's not a recipe for innovation or fast growth far into the future. They're going to get in a situation where their economy becomes stagnant, just as we've seen in other state-controlled economies in Europe or Japan or elsewhere. So I would say in the short run, at least, we're going to continue to see China focus on this export-oriented manufacturing growth, and they'll ride that as long as they can, but they're facing competition from other developed countries that have even lower cost structures, and that's going to come to an end for China, just as it's come to an end for every other country in the world.
Ambassador Miller, very enlightening. Thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. It's been a great pleasure. Look forward to talking with you again in the future.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
The most dangerous drug man has ever used is marijuana. And the reason I say that is because it's a gateway drug. It's an entry-level drug. And once you dope them up on that, anything is possible. They go on to every other drug after that. If they're going to go on to them, they go through marijuana, not around it. That's number two. Don't call me up, you dope heads. I don't want to hear from one pothead today about how great you're doing. I don't care what you say. You're a dope head. You're stupid. Your mind is fogged. That's why it's called doped. George Soros, back in the 90s, I remember with the Open Something Foundation, was funding the legalization of marijuana in Arizona and in California. I had a big argument with one of his stooges. I never forget it to this day. I knew then and there what he was doing. In my mind, George Soros was like the English empire that had doped up China prior to the takeover of China when they put opium into China, and they doped up most of the nation. They made the nation helpless. They addicted them to opium. You know, may not know the whole story, but the English doped up all of China with opium. The English brought opium into China, and fortunes were made. And, of course, some American families that you hold up as in high esteem, such as Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I'm one of the few people who know anything about history in the radio business. The middle name is Delano, right? FDR, the great social engineer. FDR, what a great man. Obama's hero. Hillary Clinton's hero. Well, the middle name Delano descends from the grandfather on the maternal side, who was fundamentally a drug dealer. His grandfather, Delano Roosevelt's great-grandfather, ran the ships out of New England that brought the opium into China for the English. Did you know that? He was a transporter of hard drugs to dope up all of China. That's how the family fortune was made. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Now, how did China break free of this grip? How did they break free of the opium? Boxer Rebellion. Boxer Rebellion, early 1900s. A group of young Turks saw that their nation was victimized by the English, so they kicked the English out. That's a very simple statement. It didn't happen overnight. There was a revolution in China. They threw the dope dealers out of China. And only after the Chinese were freed for 50 years were they able to think. 1-800-449-8255. Sam in Portland, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, thank you very much for such an incisive talk about Chinese history, about the opiate addiction in China in 19th century.
Yes.
And admire your breadth and depth of your knowledge. I was all Chinese and naturalized American. And live America, I think America every day.
Yes.
And the history about this Chinese downfall was in 1820. The
yes.
English occupy India and make the cultivation of opiate in the expectation of export to China unlimited quantity.
Yes. Yes.
And Chinese was defeated in 1840 in opium war and had to give up Hong Kong. It took 150 years and 90 million deaths before the success of Chinese Revolution in 1950.
Well, the problem is, yes, but the Boxer Rebellion occurred, I think, in 1908. Am I correct? I think it was around 1908.
It was the initiation, have a real successful resistance and overcome the difficulties started in 1900, Boxer Rebellion.
I think I may be the only American in the media who knows this story, and I do appreciate your listening. In fact, I'm honored that a man of your intelligence is a listener to the show, because sometimes I get distracted and I joke around or I just go off the deep end with jokes. But the truth of it is, we're going through a very similar period here in America. Don't you agree?
I think so. It is a self-administered injury, repeatedly. It's self-delusion and self-destruction.
You mean in America, because of the drug use, the people are living in a delusion and self-destruction, right?
The drug culture.
Yes.
Do your own thing.
Do your own thing. Live for yourself. Don't live for the country. The country means nothing. Live only for yourself. And look what we have now in the White House as a result. Take a look.
It's the second generation, and if we do not turn around, this country will be in great danger. It will be repetition of Rome and Greek.
Well, Sam, I agree with you 1,000%. Can I send you a copy of my brilliant book, Trickle Up Poverty?
Oh, thank you very much. I will send you.
I've always respected Chinese history. I'm a student of Chinese history in English translation. Unfortunately, I don't read any of the Chinese languages, but I've read much of Chinese literature for a very long period of time, for at least 30 years. People don't know it's a hobby of mine. And I'm amazed at the Chinese culture, not only in the material arts, but of course in the written word as well. Sam, thank you for calling. 1-800-449-8255. Sacramento, California. Raymond, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage. You really reminded me of a Chinese character, actually a historical character, Confucius. He was also...
Confucius spoke in epigrams, did he not?
Hmm?
He spoke in epigrams.
Yes.
But okay, no, let me go on. I'll give you my... So please continue. I'll let you speak, and then I'll interact with you afterwards. Go ahead, please.
All right. When he developed his political idea, he was also despised by the royalty. And in fact, he was kicked out by his home country.
I didn't know that about Confucius. I really didn't. I thought Confucius wrote all the Chinese fortune cookies I've been enjoying all these years. I didn't know he was real. I'm joking. I'm pulling your leg.
Okay, it's okay. Well, and in so many areas, when I'm listening to you, I feel like I'm listening to him in a way, because he also talk about politics, he also talk about bird and a tree and everyday life.
Isn't that beautiful? I really never saw the comparison, the parallels between myself and Confucius. Sometimes I think I remind people of Mr. Confucian, but not Confucius. So, you know, one thing I love about the Chinese language and people I know, Chinese American friends, is that the intelligence of people, is marked by the play on words. Chinese love to play words, don't they? Don't they love wordplay in the Chinese language?
Oh, yes.
Yes, Chinese play with words and enjoy doing that, and it's a mark of intelligence. The more you can turn words and play with them, the more intelligent and delightful you are to your companion who you're speaking with. It's a lost art. It's not done in America very much, Raymond. It really isn't.
Yes, sir.
Raymond, I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty because you'll enjoy it. That's all. You know the phone number. I haven't directed you yet to michaelsavage.com. There's terrific articles there. Yes, I want you to see things on it. So I'm driving you there. But there really are articles worth seeing. What I found is amazing, about 30 seconds on this, I have about 4.1 million unique viewers a month, which is small compared to the big sites, but large compared to the small sites. What's amazing about it is that it doesn't seem to matter what I do at a certain point. The numbers are pretty consistent every day on a website. It's something very, very interesting that once people become attenuated to doing a certain thing, you don't lose them and you don't gain new ones. I don't know how to explain it. It's almost the same with an audience in radio, which is that you build an audience over a certain number of years. It doesn't vary that much. It becomes the size maintains itself. I don't know how that works. It's a habit, a listening habit, reading habit. I don't know exactly how it works, but there it is.
Savage.